and resulted in the death of a very young member of our community. So tonight's council meeting will be adjourned in the honor of Jackson Wood and the Wood family. Okay. And with that, we will move on to special presentations, and I have a couple this evening. In 5A, I will step down from the dais and present them. Once again, I'm not sure if you're aware of the fact that we've been involved, tremendously involved, along with the Village Association in a beautification project, both along Branch Street and also along Traffic Way. And the most recent effort along Traffic Way could not have happened without the generous donations and contributions and involvement of two people that I would like to honor this evening. With the mayor's confirmation, and the first is John Godfrey from Benjoy Nursery. John, are you here? Okay, then we'll move on to Diane Mead. Is Diane here? We're going to honor them anyway. Okay. This is a mayor's commendation, first of all, to John Godfrey of Benjoy Nursery and Diane Mead from West Covina Nursery, and both of these individuals were instrumental in providing us with trees and other material for the plantings along Traffic Way at quite a substantial reduction in price. So once again, their involvement in our community and willingness to step forward and help us with this beautification project, we're going to see to it that they get this mayor's commendation, which is a commendation to these individuals on the 12th day of September in appreciation of your participation in the Traffic Way Tree Program and helping to beautify the city. So we're going to give these to our Parks Director and make sure that these individuals get this commendation. But I did want to recognize them, even though they're not here this evening, publicly for their contributions. You don't have to applaud. So. Okay, moving right along, next on our agenda for the council, this is information only. These gentlemen here are here this evening to provide you with information on the rate study effort that is underway and the presentation, summarizing the presentations that have been taken place at the Sand District. Ultimately, any questions or feedback that you can provide for Clayton or for Tom will be taken back to the Sand District Board where the decision will be made. So with that, gentlemen, feel free to take it away.
Thank you. My name is Clayton Tuckfield with Tuckfield & Associates, and with me is Tom Zinner from the Wallace Group Consulting Engineers. Tonight I'd like to make an informational presentation about some events that are occurring at the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District, which I'll refer in the future now as the district. We have conducted a comprehensive wastewater rate study, and tonight we'd like to present some of the changes that are occurring at that district. So specifically, we're going to make some rate changes. So why do we need to make changes to the rates? I'll have some items to discuss and to show you what exactly is going on and the need for those rate adjustments. How are rates going to change? I've prepared a table showing how the rates will be modified going forward in the future. And how do the rates compare with other wastewater treatment service providers? I will show other treatment service only service providers. The district is the wastewater treatment service provider to the city of Arroyo Grande, Grover Beach, and the Oceano communities. Collection service is provided by each one of those agencies. The district is facing some financial challenges. Their district is currently operating in a financial deficit. They operated last year in a deficit, and the budget this year shows they will also be operating at a deficit. In order to meet the deficit, they've called upon their financial reserves, so they're drawing down their cash balance, and they currently have a low operating fund balance. They're facing increasing operation and maintenance costs going into the future. We all know about energy costs, their increases there, chemical costs, and employee benefits. The plant is also becoming an aging facility, and to maintain that, costs are increasing as they're going forward. I'm not sure how that happened, but they're also preparing for future tightening of regulatory requirements. This requires the investment in large capital facilities to meet those regulatory requirements. This will improve safety and provide redundancy at the treatment plant. That comes at a cost, and the district will be incurring debt service of approximately $500,000 per year in fiscal year 2011. So at this point, the deficits will be increasing in a few years from now. As I mentioned, investing in large capital improvements, this is a list of some of the major items. We're looking at a new centrifuge of about $1.5 million in 06-07, that's this fiscal year. Rehabilitation of digester number 2, influent flood wall replacement, a secondary clarifier, $3.5 million. That will begin construction in 2008-09, as well as an aeration tank, about $3.5 million in 08-09. So the total of all the projects that will be constructed by the district between now and fiscal year 2011 total a little over $12 million. This shows what the district's current financial plan will be. The blue column represents the operation and maintenance expenses at the plant. The yellow column represents the investment in capital facilities and therefore capital expenditures. As you can see, the red line is the revenue that's currently coming in this year, fiscal year 06-07. We almost meet our expenses with the revenue. However, going forward, the red line drops way below the current levels that are required. So going forward, the green line then represents the changes we plan to make. A 25% increase in the rates this fiscal year, January 1, and following each year after, you can see 20% in 08, 15% in 09, and 10% in the last 2 years. And this gets us where we want to go in the last year, where you can see the green line meets all of our expenses. As I mentioned, the implementation dates, January 1st, 07, you'll see the first increase at 25%. May 1, 2007, additional 20%, and likewise for each May 1st thereafter at 15, 10, and 10. Now, not every rate will increase the same. Even though we need a 25% overall revenue increase to the district, that doesn't mean each rate will increase by 25%. We did a comprehensive look at each customer classification and assigned cost to each class based on individual flow and strength. Therefore, that means each class will pay for the wastewater treatment service that's being provided to that class. So this table represents the rates that will be charged to the member agencies. Probably most of interest to everyone is the residences and apartments, the first line item. The existing rate, and it's shown in the second column, is $78 per year. That represents $6.50 per month. The next increase shows $107.15 per year. That represents $8.93. So it'll be an increase of $2.43 per month. And as I mentioned, it's not strictly 25%. If you look down the column for the 06-07, you'll see that the percent increases adjusted varying percentages along the way. And that's the initial adjustment based on each customer's flow and strength. Going forward, if you look at the next year, fiscal year 07-08, you can see that almost all the rates adjust accordingly at 20%, and likewise going in the future. This is the remaining schedule for the other classes. You can see factories, churches, plants, schools, et cetera. And you can peruse down the line there and see that the adjustments are. But the main thing I think most people are interested in are the residential rates that I described. Now, this is a comparison of the district's rates with other wastewater treatment-only providers in the state of California, and there are only three others that provide treatment services at a secondary treatment level, and they are shown here. Central Marin, monthly charge is $10.75. Los Angeles CSD Palmdale at $10.92. Sacramento Regional County at $17. And South San Luis Obispo County at $8.93. So you can see the district has done a very good job of managing expenses at the plant for a long period of time. I don't think there's been a rate adjustment for the last 20 years. The study also looked at connection charges. When you connect up to the wastewater treatment, when you connect to the wastewater system, there's a connection fee charge, your local collection charge plus the wastewater treatment charge, and this is a wastewater treatment only portion. It's based on looking at the fixed assets plus the five-year capital improvement plan that we discussed earlier in the presentation and construction work in progress, and this results in a connection fee charge of $2,475. The current charge is $2,000 per single-family residence. This next slide will show all of the charges, and roughly, as you can see in the last column, most all the charges increase about 24%, and that's based on the items I described previously about all the investment in the capital facilities. So to summarize, then, the district's rates will increase, will provide, it'll remove the operating deficit that we discussed. They're currently operating a deficit. This will improve that situation. It'll also replenish the operating fund balance, which they've drawn down to meet those deficits in the last 2 years. It will help us meet future cost increases in operation and maintenance expense that we described, and it will also prepare for future tightening of regulatory requirements. So, so with that, let me open it up, and if there's any questions I can ask, address, please let me, Tom and I do that.
Questions for?
Is that what, why is the revenue drop in between 07 and 08? You showed a pretty significant revenue drop between this year and 08.
What's been occurring is that, for example, we're operating in a deficit, which means we don't have the money. Not enough revenues are coming in to meet the expenses. So what we have done is drawn upon our cash balance to make up the deficit. The next year it drops because we no longer have enough cash to fund that deficit. So it drops down. And then
you're counting the use of your reserves.
We're counting the use of reserves as revenue that first year. That's correct.
Councilmember Costello?
Yeah, a couple of questions. You showed a list of projects that indicated $12+ million for the capital projects.
Yes.
Did a quick tally there, and it looked like it was a little bit less than $10 million. Was that all the projects?
No, I simply showed the major projects that the district. There's a lot of, well, Tom could probably address that a little more, but there's a lot of little projects.
So there were additional projects. Okay.
Yes.
And that didn't include any debt service with it. That was straight cost of the projects.
Probably the majority of the projects are funded with cash in specific capital balances, capital funds. The last two, the aeration tank and the secondary clarifier, are planned to be funded with state revolving fund loan in fiscal year 08-09.
but essentially we're talking about an 80% rise in rates over the next 3+ years.
That's correct.
And is this because our rates have been too low for so long, or –
I think it reflects the district has done a good job of managing the facility for probably 20-some years. There's been no rate increase for 20 years, and we're just now getting to a point where there's an operating deficit. Operating deficit last year and currently projected for this fiscal year. So in order to get us back on track, especially with the improvements that we're going to finance to meet the regulatory requirements, I think this is really the crux of why we're doing it.
And when we get to the end of the rate increases in 3.5-4 years, what's the monthly rate we're getting to then?
I guess I don't have it in front of me. I don't recall. I have to look at the report. But you're talking about fiscal year 2011?
Right. So if residential is 128 annually in 2 years, then we get another 10, and let's see, that's 50. Another 30% on top of that.
That would be correct.
Another,
yeah.
36. So it gets to about $160, $170 by the 12.
I think that sounds about right.
$14, $15 a month. How does that compare to the other rates that you had up there?
You mean as far as the...
Well, if you can bring up the one with the other districts that provide secondary only. There.
Yeah. Well, keep in mind that their rates will increase, too, as you
yeah.
go forward. And,
right.
But
so.
At least at this point, what we can say is that the rate that will currently be implemented January 1 includes this. So it's $8.93 compared to everybody else there when you're significantly lower than they are.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that.
I think the thing to realize is that over the past 20 years, there had been very little major work done to the facility. Correct me if I'm wrong, Tom, and like any other facility of its type, now we're in a process where those major components are starting to wear out. And many of them, like the clarifier, what was the bottom line on that?
On the chlorine contact chamber?
Yeah.
It was $2.5 million.
Right. That's for one component.
Right.
And so what we're doing is lining up those capital projects for the future. And that future is already upon us in terms of the need to replace and repair and enhance those components. So it's a cyclical thing, and that's we're at a point right now where the existing rate structure just won't carry it. Mm-hmm. So we're starting to dip drastically into the district's reserves. So that's where we're at. Any other feedback for Clayton or Tom?
I do have one more question. The debt service that's listed, how long is that debt service projected out? Is that a 20-year cycle on that?
Yes. The terms will be set by the state as far as what the interest rate will be. But typically, it's half the normal GO bond rate of the state and then 20-year term. Also, one of the best things about SRF funds is that once you get approved for the project, you draw down the amount that you borrow as you need it to make the construction. So you're not actually paying strictly principal and interest until the project is actually completed, in which case then it reverts to an annual P&I.
But we do qualify for the state revolving fund.
We have had initial discussions with the state. Tom and I plan to visit the representatives to get put on the priority list, and we will make sure that we're in line for such funds.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it. All right. That takes us to item 6, agenda review. Move that all ordinances presented tonight be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. That takes us to item 7, community comments and suggestions. This is an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and offer any general comments, recommendations, suggestions on matters that are not published on this evening's agenda. The Brown Act restricts the council from taking any action on matters that are not published on the agenda. We would ask that if you wish to come forward, please adhere to the 3-minute rule and please address the council as a whole. Any member of the community would like to come forward on items not on this evening's agenda?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of your council. My name is Gary Fowler. I'm a resident of almost 40 years of the city of San Luis Obispo in our county. I have been asked by several friends that I have in your community, both in the business community and some seniors, to come forward this evening and speak urging the defeat of Tax Measure 06, the sales tax initiative. As a retired public employee and property owner in the county, as far as I'm concerned and some of my friends, we feel this is just going to be an additional tax that a majority of seniors, the business community, and those on fixed or low incomes are going to be ill able to afford. The community should realize that Paso Robles and Atascadero cities, as well as the unincorporated portion of the county, have all decided not to seek the sales tax increase. A poll in Pismo Beach revealed that their electorate was against the sales tax. Just today, I talked with a number of seniors, approximately 12, who said that they were not in favor of it because of all the additional tax measures that they would be facing this year on the statewide initiative and the bond issues, and not knowing whether those would pass. As far as I'm concerned and my back past dealings with the state, any major correction of Halsey and Briscoe Road interchanges, which has been named as a major issue to be used for this type of funding, would probably come from state and federal grants through the transportation agency. Very little would be borne by the city. The San Luis Obispo City in 1970 placed a user utility tax on us of 5%, which was on all of our telephone, gas, electric, cable, TV, and water bills. They said to us in the city that that tax would cover anything that would occur in the future that would be needed for capital outlays. Now they've come along and they too are asking for a sales tax increase. And a lot of the seniors and a lot of the people on fixed incomes are saying, you know, where is it going to stop? I feel that you should wait until a later election and ask that your council designate specific issues that this tax would be used for, such as a third of it for your general fund, a third for sports and recreation, and maybe a third of it for senior citizens, seniors, projects, and centers. Ask the city finance officer how much money your city has received in the last year in federal and state grant money for police, fire, streets, and social issues. This is certainly tax money that we throughout the state are paying. In the city of San Luis Obispo, we received over $6 million in those state grant monies. I've worked for years with vehicle registration fees, and I can assure you that your monthly share of the motor vehicle license fee that you're now getting over the last year and a half has returned fully to what you were receiving, and in fact, it's even more than what you were receiving. With all high taxes being utilized for state retirement salaries and benefits, increased anticipation and utility rate increases at the first of the year, an increase in Medicare on January of 07 of over $100 anticipated, this is not a time to increase sales tax. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Even though we can't respond, or I should say take action, Mr. Fowler, I would like to meet with you. The information that you have on the transportation money is not quite correct, and I'd like to have an opportunity to chat with you. Okay. Anyone else who would like to come forward?
Yes, good evening, Council. Bob Lloyd with AGP Video. We are providers for the government access channel that you're watching now on television. We've had some problems with the channels, and our company is in Morro Bay, and we'd like to make sure that if the community sees the channel off the air, don't hesitate to give our office a call at 772-2715, and we'll be happy to respond immediately. So we've been having some problems with the channel, and we might just need the community's help to help us solve the problem.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Do we have a handheld mic?
Yeah.
With you in just a second here.
I am Don Schultz. I live at 610 Myrtle Street. I ask that you give back our 10 feet of land you have taken from me and my neighbors on Nakara Place. Our land has not nor will remove your drainage problems. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward? Okay. Seeing none, we will close community comments and suggestions, and that takes us to item 8, which is our consent agenda. This is normally a group of items that the council approves in one action unless there are items on the consent agenda that individual council members would like to pull for separate action or discussion. This is also an opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on consent items. And this evening we have consent items 8A through 8I. Those items on your agenda, if you picked one up at the door. If there's any member of the public would like to come forward on any of those items, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay, seeing none, we'll bring this back to the council. Myself, I would like to pull 8G. Are there any other items that council members would like to pull for a separate action or discussion? Okay. 8G is a consideration of revisions to the city travel policy and discussion of the assembly bill that came out recently. This is a complex issue. It's one that we don't have an opportunity to get into tonight. I've discussed this item with the city manager. The recommendation, I believe, is for us to continue 8G, and in the interim, that we possibly would form a subcommittee that would do a bit more research into this topic. And it could be a subcommittee jointly represented by the council and staff. And I'd volunteer to serve on that on that subcommittee to take another look at this. You know, what we might also do with this, Steve, is look at the possibility of separate policies. I think the nature of the business that staff does relative to the nature of the business that the council does is quite different. And so we may want to take another look at maybe how we approach this. But we can get into that a little bit later on. Before we move forward with this, I think what I would like to do is, with the council's approval, is continue it and do a little bit more research and look at what else is out there in the way of policies that exist, particularly attendant to AB 1234. Any problems?
Is that a motion?
Is
that okay? Okay, then I'll make a motion to continue 8G and ask the city manager to go ahead and form a subcommittee to take another look at this.
Did you, just a suggestion, did you want to see if one other, we could have a subcommittee with
anyone else,
two members on the council?
Anyone else on the council want to jump in?
I'll join in.
Okay, Councilmember Arnold?
Thank you.
Is there there's a second? Any second. Discussion? Did you second? Or did?
We're battling over.
Okay. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Mayor Ferraro?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
We didn't do the other one.
We have to do the rest of the consent agenda.
Oh, thank you.
Would you like to make the motion, Mr. Mayor?
Hang on. Okay, got the rest of the consent items. I'll entertain a motion for approval of items 8A through 8I, with the exception of 8G, which we just disposed of.
So moved.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Anything else in there to read tonight, Tim? No? Roll call.
Council Board Member Arnold?
Yes.
Council Board Member Costello?
Yes.
Council Board Member Dickens?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Vice Chair Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Chair Ferrara?
Yes. Thank you. All right. We've had some new developments in item 9D. And there's been a request to move 9D first on our list of public hearings. And so if there's no objections on the part of the council, we will move 9D to the front.
Mr. Mayor, if we're going to move 9D, I will need to step down due to my indirect conflict of interest as a benefactor of the Dixon Ranch.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens is stepping down on 9D. Steve? Okay.
I'll start off anyways. Thank you, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. We apologize for the last minute changes in terms of our process here. But subsequent to the staff reports being distributed, a couple issues have come up that we were unable to fully resolve prior to the meeting, and therefore we wanted to modify our recommendation for this evening. The first issue was identification of some potential impacts on a neighboring private property as a result of the proposed drainage system. This is an issue we believe can be resolved, but will require some additional analysis. The second issue is a process issue, a discrepancy in our public hearing notice requirements. In response to a telephone call we received from a citizen or a neighboring property owner complaining that they had not received a public hearing notice, in response to that, we did a thorough review of the public hearing address list and did discover there was at least two or three key addresses that we felt had not been included. Not sure why. We do have a procedure fairly consistent to other cities as far as how the lists are provided to us and how they're distributed. However, based on this and some concerns we've had in the past, we've done a review of that process, and we will be coming back with some recommendations on how to improve that process in the future. As for now, based on these circumstances, we are recommending that the public hearing be continued to the October 10th meeting, at which time we believe that will hopefully provide staff sufficient time to address both of these issues. We'd also recommend at this, while we don't recommend proceeding with any portions of the public hearing, we would recommend that council take the opportunity at this point to identify any requests you have of staff of additional information or additional items you might want us to include in the revised staff report that we'll come back with at the continued public hearing. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. I think along with questions, I'm assuming what you're asking for, Steve, is a kind of a list of things to do between now and October 10th on this matter.
I think now that you've had without deliberation, now that you've each had a chance to look at the staff report, if you feel anything is not sufficiently addressed or there are other options that you'd like us to study, include information, basically anything else you'd like us to address in the report, it just helps us to make sure everything's complete when we bring it forward rather than having to come back at a subsequent meeting.
Okay, thanks. Any questions and or things to add to the list? Councilmember Costello?
One thing that I would ask is when you bring the staff report back the next time, one of the key issues here is we're discussing whether or not we're going to require an EIR based on the recommendations of the Planning Commission. Let's bring the recommendations the Planning Commission made forward into the body of the report itself and not have to dig into one of the attachments to find them. I think they're in attachment 9 or 10 now. It'd be a little bit simpler if they were right up front. Give me a moment here to go through my notes here. I think most of the questions that I had revolved around the issue with the drainage wall that we're talking about, so I'm going to believe that those are going to be dealt with, so I'm not going to ask them now, and we'll wait and see what you come back with on those.
Is that it?
I think maybe a little bit more clarification in the the main body of the report itself on the differentiation between the 25-foot setback for the creek and the 25-foot setback from the contour lines would also be useful. And that pretty much covers what I was interested in.
Okay. Thank you. Hearing. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a couple questions regarding the mitigated negative deck. On page 6 of that document, there is reference that the loss of prime soils is not subject to mitigation under CEQA. And I'd like that expanded upon a little bit because my understanding from Commissioner Nancy Parker was that CEQA did treat prime soils as something that had to be mitigated. On page 7, we're using the LISA model the evaluation of the property. And while I don't think this is something that we can deal with specifically before this meeting, I'd like us to look into starting to create our own LISA model, because I think one of the problems with the model that's used here is that they don't value small parcels. And so basically, I think either all or almost all of our ag land is considered not valuable under the state model. On page 15, MM4.2, the mitigation plan that is referenced in that section, we need to develop that plan and the monitoring before we can go forward with this project that I picked up from a CEQA class down in San Diego last week.
I'm sorry, could you repeat that section?
It's page 15, and it's section MM4.2. We make reference to a mitigation plan and monitoring, but we don't actually state what that plan is. Page 15, MM4.4, is reference to the trees, and this is just a question, is there any historical value to the trees since they've been around for a while? Let's see. On page 29, there's also reference to the fact that the wastewater sewer line is restricted at the Fair Oaks Avenue trunk. And the question that I had was, will the 18-inch upgrade line be in place prior to the completion of this project? And then the other question that I saw that some of the citizens had concerns with was with the traffic model, based on the fact that it hadn't been done during the school times. And there was some question as to whether or not they recognized also that there was a freeway ramp and exit there. And so if we can have some clarification on that. And then also if there's a potential, if since the project has been reduced since I think the initial study was done, that also might impact the traffic study in a positive way. Those are my questions. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. The only thing I'd like to add to the list, a couple of things. First of all, I'd like to take another look at the criteria for a negative deck as it relates to the sub-areas individually. In other words, I'd like to look at environmental factors as they relate to sub-area 1 and sub-area 2. Specifically, those environmental categories, EIR categories, and how they might apply to each sub-area separately. And then the other thing that I would like to do is maybe tie together better the action that the council took as relates to Newsom Springs, the drainage plan, and the drainage strategy that's incorporated in this particular project. In other words, it'd be good to see the entire plan since we indicated that it was going to be a comprehensive look that might involve a couple of the different strategies or alternatives that were in the drainage plan. This was one of the key components, so I'd like to see a better tie-in there. And you may be doing that anyway, Steve, if you're going to unwrap the drainage issue that you talked about. So that's my contribution to the punch list, if you will. Anything else? All right. My apologies to those of you who were here this evening on 9D. We are not going to take public comment. I think based on what you've heard, the complexion of the staff report may change between now and October 10th. So the October 10th meeting will be noticed. The information will be out and available for you. But we will not take public comment tonight on 9D because of the noticing issue. So those of you who are here for that, there will be no further action taken tonight. So thank you very much for your time. Okay, with that, we're going to go back to 9A. I'm sorry. We sliding by these motions.
We could take a motion. We'll be re-noticing the item, so it's not technically necessary, but maybe in order to provide people here with an understanding of the specific date, that wouldn't hurt.
Okay, fine. Then we'll entertain a motion to continue 9D until October 10th. All right. And a second?
Second.
All right. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara?
Yes. Okay. Let's see, did I forget anything else? Councilmember Dickens? I was ready to jump into 9A without you. Okay. So, consideration of the use of the state 2006-07 COPS funding. Good evening, Chief.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and Council. Under recommendation, it's recommended after conducting a public hearing and making any modification, the City Council approved the expenditure of $100,000 as authorized by the state for law enforcement services under the Citizens Option for Public Safety, which is a COPS grant. In addition, it is recommended that the City Council authorize the expenditure of $101,563 carried over from the city's fiscal year 2005 and 6 COPS program. The good news is that there is no general fund impact, and that this is, of course, state money that is provided via a grant process. The key points I think that I wanted to be sure to mention was that these allocations are separate and distinct from the general fund per the grant process, and that I'd also like to mention that the city must establish a separate interest-bearing fund to record the receipt and expenditures of these monies. The funds are scheduled to be transferred this month from the state to the San Luis Obispo County Supplemental Law Enforcement Services Fund, and there will be a meeting regarding that on September 21st to ensure that everything complies with law and that the appropriations are appropriate for law enforcement required or law enforcement needs. The problem that we are currently running into is that the communication system in the police department itself is about 20 years old, and it's beginning to get into a realm where the vendor can no longer support the system because it's just a little too old and parts and things like that are not available. It's very simple, really. And so we are looking at a situation where we do need to replace those systems. As you know, those communications systems are quite expensive, and over a period of time and continuing with the COPS program, we hope to replace all of that so that it's up to speed and useful. There are some mitigating factors as well in that we are looking at consolidated dispatch possibilities. That's in process. I can't really provide an exact answer how that will turn out at this point, but we do need to look at that system and begin to make some adjustments the sooner the better to make sure that our system remains viable. The alternatives, as you'll note in the report, is to approve Chief of Police recommendations as described to you, or modify as appropriate, or do not approve.
Are there questions for Tony on this? Councilmember Costello?
Real quick question. I would believe that any system that we're going to get into now is going to improve our interoperability capabilities, and it's going to be an improvement not just in the state of the equipment itself, but in the capabilities that the equipment will provide.
Right. Again, because the equipment is 20 years old, it has some serious limitations, and so our intent would be to make sure that it is interoperable, especially in this day and age with, you know, the possibility of, you know, earthquake or terrorism or whatever it may be, is that we'd be able to work with other agencies in a very cohesive, efficient manner. And right now, our system being outdated is probably not as effective as it could be.
Thank you.
If I could add a little bit to that, as you know, we also have this study going on potential for joint dispatch and communications amongst the other agencies. And the chief has been doing a great job of trying to hold up these expenditures as long as possible. So we can get the results of that study, and hopefully this may be an opportunity to begin to implement some of the things that come out of that study. It's a little bit of a timing issue and challenging, but we're trying to coordinate that as much as we can.
Well, I had a follow-up question. As I recall, when this issue came up prior, we were talking about, and I think it was retired Chief Trebork, that indicated that we were going to, was there some form of countywide joint communication, again, along the lines of interoperability, ensuring that was Slo County Sheriff working on something that was going to tie all the police departments together? I'm searching back, trying to think of...
I know, especially since September 11th, there's been a lot of discussion about interoperability and making sure all agencies can communicate. And really, you know, in a functional way, we can. If it's not a perfect case scenario, but that does exist out there. But as far as a specific program that the Sheriff's Department is going to implement, I don't have any details on that at this point.
Well, that might be something we want to look at. I know. I mean, right now, if there were a multi-agency response, we would certainly want to have equipment that would at least be adaptable so that we could communicate with CHP or Grover or Pismo and the sheriff. And I think that, if I recall, that was the direction that we were going in at the time. So, and that was before the... I guess the buzzword of interoperability came out. That was something that Rick was working on. So we may want to take a look at ensuring that we at least have that minimum capability before we get to making a determination on whether a PSAP or joint dispatch is going to work.
I mentioned joint dispatch just because we have somebody assisting with us with that, and he has done somewhat of a review of all our dispatch centers, but also radio equipment. He's coming back in a few weeks to bring a technical equipment person that he works with to look at this whole thing. And he's indicated that one of his initial recommendations is going to be focused on this whole issue of developing a plan for at least all the agencies to work towards more consistency within the equipment. So you're authorizing the funding this evening, but don't worry, we're not proceeding to buy anything until we can get as far as we can into that process and assure the equipment's going to be compatible with everything else we're working on.
And also the 0506 money that I guess is going to go away if we don't earmark it by June 07. Is that correct?
Correct.
And is that part of the strategy here for the equipment purchase?
Right, that would be part of, because I would make it a little over $200,000 in total, and the entire system was estimated, I'm not sure what it would be today, but was estimated at $507,000. So it's a multi-step process, so it would all go towards communications and enhancing that.
Yeah, just for the record, this is grant money that is earmarked specifically for law enforcement use, and is it Motorola equipment that we have currently?
We do have Motorola equipment. I don't think it's all Motorola, but there is a variety. I wish I could tell you exactly what it was, but it's not completely Motorola.
Well, I recall that we got a letter from Motorola indicating mm-hmm. that because our equipment was so old, they were no longer going to support it.
Right.
So I think that's kind of a heads up that it's time to replace
right.
it.
And it's a little bit of a timing issue, as the city manager mentioned, is that we are looking at these other aspects.
Yeah.
But the timing is coming along where just to provide the services that we do, they're commingling, I guess you might say, and it's time.
Okay. Any other questions?
I have a question, something of a concern which relates to that sort of time element. Is there a plan B in case, you know, come June 7th or somewhere, I'm sorry, June of 07, that we're not close? Is there a plan B for some alternative way to spend the funds before we lose them? And is that possible since we've actually allocated them a year ago? But what I'm looking at is if we come up against this decision and we aren't quite ready to make it, are we just going to have to walk away from the $100,000 or is there an alternative plan in place?
I think there's – would you like to?
Well, we have a plan in play. You know, the prior plan is what we're moving forward with at this point, where we have the plan for the equipment. It's just we wanted to hold that off as long as we can, because I think we're going to get some recommendations fairly soon, within the next couple months, for how we, all the agencies, can be, the equipment can be better standardized and coordinated. And so we wanted to wait to get those recommendations and see, you know, see if they're feasible. Otherwise, we can always go back to our existing plan with our equipment that's compatible with what we're doing now.
Thank you.
Okay. This is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience that would like to come forward and comment on 9A, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Okay. No takers. Then we will close the public hearing portion of 9A. And bring this back. And Councilmember Dickens, why don't we start with you?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't have any questions about this. I think it's an appropriate use. We've directed staff, and I say we, City of Aurora Grandy and our sister cities and so forth, to look at how we can have an economy of scale in regards to some of our communication and dispatch. And I think that the recommendations as presented by staff are appropriate. And I think that's a good use of these monies. So I have no problems with staff's recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Costello.
I can only concur with what Councilmember Dickens has said. I think this is an excellent use of the dollars. They'll be allocated to rectify a problem that is getting old. We're not going to be able to carry the equipment we've got any longer. It's going to have to be replaced. It's going to cost $500,000 to do it, and this is a good use of these funds to do it, so I can support this completely.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Yes, I supported this, obviously, when we looked at it last year for the original $100,000, and so I can definitely go concur to go forward with it. I do want to also stress that the anticipated expense of the full $500,000 will come from COPS funds going forward from the state, and so that this will not be something that comes out of the general fund. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, I too can support the recommendation of staff.
I'll make it unanimous. The last thing we want is a breakdown of communications hardware in our law enforcement agency. So this is something that we must do, and I just want to make sure that we continue to monitor the deadlines and, as the Mayor Pro Tem indicated, have a plan in place for the use of that 0506 money. Okay. With that, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd move that we approve the Chief Police recommendation to utilize the fiscal year 2006-2007 COPS funds to be used as part of a multi-year program for the replacement and enhancement of the Police Department's base radio communications equipment.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion? Hearing none. Roll call.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Thank you. That takes us to 9B, consideration of a conditional use permit, case number 05013, a proposed wireless facility located at Reservoir 1.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Just get my PowerPoint up here. It's your mouth. Okay. Thank you. If somebody can hit the lights back there, please. Thank you. The project site is located on city property at the top of Reservoir Road. Existing on the property is a recently retrofitted water tank surrounded by a chain link fence and then a number of mature pine and oak trees. Bordering the site is the Methodist camp to the east, a residential development to the north and west, and then a church and school to the south. So under consideration tonight is a conditional use permit for a proposed wireless facility and then a land lease agreement with New Singular Wireless PCS. Proposed specifically are 12 antennas divided into three sectors on top of a 35-foot-tall monopine located adjacent to the water tank perimeter road. Also proposed are 9 equipment cabinets. The existing fence would be relocated around the cabinets with green slats added for better screening. The purpose of this facility is to fill a coverage gap along Highway 101 and then also within the village area. The lack of coverage is shown in yellow, while the good coverage is shown in green on this overhead. The proposed 35-foot height of the facility is necessary to send and receive signals within that underserved area. And as you can see on the slide, the green has taken over that underserved area. And this is a photo simulation of the monopine looking up to the project site from Traffic Way. The Planning Commission considered this project on August 15th and recommended approval after investigating two other possible site locations. The first site considered was the Seventh-day Adventist Church property located on Vernon Street just south of the reservoir site. The applicant stopped pursuing this particular location when Singular learned about the available site at Reservoir Number 1, which has already been stubbed out for telecom facilities. The height of the monopine at this location would need to be between 75 and 80 feet for the signal to clear the existing trees. The second site considered was the Methodist Church camp located east of the reservoir site. There were three locations analyzed on this particular property, all of which are closer to existing residences than the reservoir site. The monopine height would vary between 50 and 75 feet, depending on the particular location. In 2001, the City Council adopted telecommunication facilities, siting and permit submittal requirements. Based on these requirements, the applicant has submitted information regarding the technology, radio frequency exposure, co-location, visual impacts, and site capacity of the proposed facility. So, in conclusion, the Planning Commission and staff believe that the Reservoir 1 site is the superior location given its ability to send signals at a lower height, then also its distance from.
Kelly, do we have. Do we have a monopine at another reservoir site in the city?
We sure do. That is the Nextel site off of Hillcrest.
Okay. Do we have a picture of that?
I'm sorry. No, I don't. It's actually quite a nice tree.
Well, it's not really a tree. It just looks
like a tree. Well, it looks like a nice tree. Okay. It's realistic.
Okay. Any other questions? Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The one over in Hillcrest, how does it compare location-wise to existing homes as this one would?
That one is actually adjacent to a school and residential properties. I can't give you the exact distance, but it's similar in location to existing residences.
Okay. Who will own the monopine? Is it, I not that we're foreseeing that they would abandon it, but if they would it be ours then, or would they take their pine and go home?
I believe that's in the lease agreement.
If you proceed with the CUP approval, you'll proceed with a lease approval. Within the lease, it's the lessee's obligation to remove it within 90 days of termination of the lease.
Okay. And then to follow up on that, I noticed that this pole will allow for one other carrier to co-locate on it. In that scenario, would we be able to rent the additional space, or would Singular, in essence, be able to collect rent from, say, Verizon?
And we've run into this situation with some facilities down at SoTo. We take precautions to carve out a 50% interest in any co-location on their monopine, so we split the revenues. With regard to the monopine itself, any cabinetry or land lease itself would go to the city. That would have to be separately negotiated.
That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Dickens.
Yeah,
Kelly, this evening we received a letter from Marlis Witt, I believe. I don't know if you had a chance to look at this. And my question is the pictures that are depicted here off of Old Ranch Road, it appears that this is not the same location, but correct me if I'm wrong, if this is the proposed location that we are looking at for this particular site.
The proposed location is located further away than what you see here is that pole.
That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm.
That would be the one that's being depicted here is actually the location on the Methodist Camp property. Is that correct?
Oh, gosh, I need a pointer.
This one?
Thank you. Yes, in between those two poles, right next to that to the right is the pole that is referred to in the letter.
Okay. So my reading on that is, if I'm correct, that pole is actually behind the tank as we're looking at it?
Mm-hmm. That is correct.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Any other questions?
I just had one question. In the minutes from the Planning Commission, they said that the landscaping for the water tank hadn't been put in place yet. One of the comments from this from the public was that the city had not followed through and put in the landscaping around the water tank. Has that taken place? Or because I know we set aside quite a bit of money to move a couple of oak trees, and I just wanted to follow up if that had in fact taken place yet or not.
Well, I know if you can see on this photo simulation, there is a gap or a lack of vegetation around the proposed monopine. And in that gap area is where the applicant is required to put in shrubs and trees that would not at maturity exceed 35 feet so as not to interfere with the frequency. As with regards to what the city was going to do with the landscaping when they did the tank retrofit, I'm not certain as to what the requirements were, Steve.
Well, the relocation of the oak trees has taken place, but I'm not sure about the addition of the trees that were supposed to be added, so we'll need to check on that for you.
Because there was quite an extensive replant.
Yeah, it should be done by now unless there's something I'm unaware of that's holding that up.
All right.
That's been quite a while, Steve. We need to take another look at that. So that should have been in, I would imagine.
I would think so, unless maybe they were holding up to see if they needed to coordinate with these plannings. So.
Okay. Any other questions? All right, this is a public hearing. If there are members of the audience who would like to come forward on 9B, this would be an opportunity for you to do so. Please adhere to the 3-minute rule, and please address the council as a whole.
I'm Alan Stevenson of 341 Old Ranch Road. Was not so much my objections to the tower, but some of the process that's gone on. I attended both of the Planning Commission meetings. At the meeting in June, Commissioner Brown specifically requested that the Methodist camp be actively investigated. To the best of my understanding, the singular representative has said that they really basically stopped when they found out that the water tank was stubbed out. So it was not, the best of the camp was not looked at. At the meeting in August, this matter was raised again, and again we were told we didn't look any further than the water tank because it stubbed out. Again, the Methodist camp was referred to as a preferred location, but really nothing happened. My concern is that Singulars really never followed through on the request that they actively investigate the Methodist camp as a location. Also at the first session in June, Commissioner Fellows, at the close of the session, said to the number of us who attended that basically our comments were not really valid. There was FCC law to be considered, and whatever we said didn't really come into play because once someone had approached the FCC and said, this is where the tower goes, this is where the tower goes. It doesn't matter what the public says. Now, in the August session, I spoke with the singular representative who said that Commissioner Fellows was completely mistaken in this supposition, that if the public has comment that it needs to be heard and needs to be considered, and the facility would have to be reconsidered if the comments were valid and had merit. At that session in August, there was an opportunity for public comment. I was the only person who attended. I believe I'm the only person who attended because at the June session, Commissioner Fellows said, we're not really interested in what you have to say. At the August session, I was the only person who attended. I did not stand up and speak when there's an opportunity for public comment. When they closed the public comment, Commissioner Tate proceeded to make remarks about having gone and visited the site. There were statements that he made that I feel were incorrect, but because public comment had been closed, I didn't feel I could say anything. I did go up at the intermission and talk to Commissioner Tate, who had said, if I had said what I said at intermission, he would have reconsidered his vote. Not necessarily voted nay, but he would have reconsidered his position, given that he had not, for example, he had not attended the June session, and he had not seen some of the photo simulations. There are additional slides that were presented in June that better portray the monopine and show the other facility. The commission, I believe, made a number of misstatements, particularly relative to the FCC, and also was not properly forced singular to look into this Methodist camp. That's basically it.
Okay. All right, thank you. Kelly, could you follow up, not tonight, but could you follow up with the gentleman and see if we can't clear up some of the issues on the FCC? I'm not certain what took place with the Planning Commission, but perhaps we can follow up on that. Okay. Any other members of the audience that would like to come forward on this item?
Mr. Mayor, members of the council, my name is Gordon Bell. I'm the agent for Singular Wireless. And I'd like to, first of all, just say that Kelly did a good job of summarizing the previous project description and the alternatives that we looked at during the review process at the Planning Commission. I just would like to clarify a few issues. One, I think that the gentleman that spoke before me, I met with him after the last Planning Commission hearing and did disclose to him that the FCC does have certain limitations, as your council may know, on preclusion of local agencies considering certain aspects of telecommunications facilities, and that's specifically related to RF and transmissions and health and safety with respect to that. But I informed him that local agencies are not precluded from considering other issues such as land use compatibility and aesthetics and other land use issues related to zoning. I was not at the first hearing. I was unfortunately out of town and did have another representative fill in for me who was not as informed about the project as I was. And so when he says that some misstatements may have been made, that may have been true. That was primarily in relationship to the height of the tower with respect to that existing wooden pole, and I think I clarified for the gentleman. The other issue was with regards to the Methodist camp. We did look into that further and did enter into some discussions with the Methodist camp as far as entering into a lease agreement. However, after alternative was actually environmentally superior, and given that we had already spent the time and money and entered into lease negotiations with the city, we continued to pursue this alternative to its end and see what that resolution might be before we pursued any additional lease negotiations with the Methodist camp. So hope that clears that issue up for you. I'm available for any questions.
Any questions? All right. Thank you. Sure.
Yeah, I just related. Did you review, because I was on the Planning Commission when we did look at the Methodist camp, was the coverage similar from what was in fact going to be a much taller monopine, but was the coverage similar to what you would be achieving with this one here at the water reservoir?
Yeah, Councilmember Guthrie. The coverage is similar, but that was why we needed additional height at that location, because we essentially had to see, we have to see as we get further back away from Highway 101, we had to have line of sight to Highway 101, which meant we had to see over the water tank and that property, city property. So again, we would have needed 50 to 75 feet, depending on whether or not it was a co-locatable tower, and, you know, further engineering studies would have had to been performed. So that would have resulted in similar coverage.
But if it was that much taller.
Right, if okay. It was that much taller. With a 35-foot tree, we wouldn't have gotten any coverage on Highway 101.
And as I'll just make something of a comment here. As I remember, what actually took place with that was that there was a disagreement about whether the new regulations had been met or not. I'm not quite sure that it was headed for denial based on neighborhood observation as much as it was that some of the engineering work hadn't been done that was expected. But, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? All right. Thank you, Mr. Bell. Anyone else would like to come forward?
Good evening. My name is Steve Talent, 250 Wesley. I am the site director of the Methodist Church Camp. Fortunately, I was not able to meet to make the first two Planning Commission meetings where this was discussed at. I have prior obligations on Tuesday nights, and the second one, unfortunately, was right before the kids went back to school and the only time to squeeze in a family vacation. Unfortunately, I do not feel that negotiations were taken place or proper contact was, you know, made with Methodist Camp. I took it on information that was given there that was incorrect. There's only one gentleman left on the Planning Commission that was there 7 years ago when the project was originally proposed. The original proposal was for an 85-foot, with Crown Castle, was an 85-foot tower. From my best understanding of where we're talking about locating the tower up on the water tank now is less than 100 feet from the property line up against the Methodist camp, and maybe a 5 to 10 foot elevation difference from where it's at, currently proposed to where it's at now. I think that there's been a lot of, I have to agree with the gentleman that I'm not sure that this project has been really pushed forward in a good faith effort.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we will close the public hearing portion of 9B. And why don't we start with Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Give me the easy one to go first on. I am a little troubled, I must say, by what I'm hearing is how things have transpired at the Planning Commission. But with that said, I must say that it does seem that a 35-foot pine would be superior to a 50 to 75-foot tall pole tree. And so for that reason, unless there's, I guess, compelling reasons to look elsewhere at this point, I am inclined to approve this project. I would like to see some follow-up to understand better what did happen at the Planning Commission, and if we can maybe possibly resolve that in the future so we don't have these kind of problems, since the one person in the audience doesn't seem to be particularly opposed to the project, just to the process. So thank you, Mr. Mayor. Okay.
Thank you. Councilmember Costello.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I, too, am a little bit distressed about hearing the procedural problems that seem to have gone on at the Planning Commission. However, I do agree also that a 35-foot monopine is probably superior to a 65, 75, 85-foot monopine. 5 years ago, we had several of these come before us, and there are limitations that the federal government does put on you in terms of how you can deny certain aspects of this. And I remember one of the ones that struck me as kind of difficult to deal with was the issue of a health risk because all of their documentation says there is no health risk from the towers. They pose no risk. And I did search and search as hard as I could to find something that contradicted that, and I could not find any definitive studies that did contradict that. So while I'm a little bit dismayed at how we've gotten to this point, this does seem to be a superior alternative, and I can support going forward with this.
Thank you. Councilmember Dickens.
Mr. Mayor, Kelly, I have a quick question before I go into my comments. The proposed site, and I'm looking at attachment 5 that's been presented into, I don't know if you have that available to show on the screen. There's a couple of things that I'm noticing as I look at this aerial is that it appears that the site that's being proposed is the furthest distance away from any residential units that I can see of all of these other proposed sites. But regardless of that, my question to you is how close is this proposed site that is currently is the city property, and I'm assuming that's property that's adjacent to the tank up there. How close is that to the Methodist Church camp?
How close is the
proposed site?
The proposed site to the Methodist camp property?
Correct.
I'm not positive without going to a map that has the parcels isolated out and having a correct scale. There is, however, the original slide that I had. This is the city's property, and the Methodist camp is to the right, and is it a little bit down below too, Steve?
It's
is it all that?
25% of the water tank sets on.
Okay, 25% of it.
To the city.
Mm-hmm.
So 25% of the water tank is on property that's owned by the Methodist camp, leased to the city of Roy.
So where the city's property.
It's kind of hard to see here, but it appears that the proposed site, Bob, if you don't mind getting that a little larger, if it can.
Maybe turn the lights down too.
The proposed site is in this area right here.
That's
is that correct?
Correct?
And the residents off of is that Old Ranch Road here, I believe.
Yes.
These other sites seem to be a little bit closer. My question is that this is the clump of trees that are probably the largest and would provide as much concealing as possible with this tree that's or this fake tree that's being proposed. We also have a slope that goes down here. This is actually a valley in this area. And I guess what I'm concerned about and what I'm looking at is how do we create the least amount of impact of this particular pine monolith, whatever we want to call it, cell tower, hide it as much as possible and still create the coverage. And I'm just wondering whether this area right down in here, which is even further away from more residential, might be a little bit further down the hill. I don't know about the topography here. But closer into these trees would actually provide the best concealment. And the reason why I asked what the distance is between, I don't know whether that's city property in this area or whether this is camp property, but I think that what I would be looking at is maybe not necessarily what's the most convenient for the applicant as far as a land use, but how we could actually place this in a place that would actually be the least amount of impact to, and I think that the neighbors have a very legitimate argument, and I think that we need to conceal this as much as possible. And I wonder whether this area right in here,
which include about 150-foot run from the equipment to the antennas, so we need to keep that cabling about 150 feet. The other issue is then, again, how do you get power and telephone service to a site? The location that you're pointing out would be suitable. It's downhill, which means, again, we'd have to put in a taller monopine. So excluding cost at, you know, $1,000 a foot, we're talking about a 60 to 80-foot tree in that area, given the height of given the topography. Also, as you go downhill, from this site, we're actually getting optimal coverage. We didn't need coverage to the backside and to the residences over on Old Ranch Road in that area, but with this site, you're actually getting coverage over a larger area than what our search ring designated, which was the village and Highway 101. So you're getting that optimal coverage from a 35-foot height that we wouldn't get with an 80-foot site on the downslope side in the valley. You're also talking about trenching. I'm not sure where the utilities come from on that property, but there are none, I'm quite sure, in close proximity to that location that you just pointed out. So we'd have to consider the trenching aspect and the impacts to the trees and killing some trees, oak trees along the way in doing that. So those are some of the things we consider. The city site, again, was already stubbed out all the way up to the water tank. So we have conduit and don't need to trench except for laying conduit around the water tank and the asphalt. So, again, it simplifies the process.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. I appreciate that. Tim, if I could ask about in regards to the lease agreement, it appears that because of the city's being proactive and stubbing out the utilities or at least a conduit for future utilities, does that weigh into our lease agreement from an advantage from the city? In other words, are we charging more for our conduit that we've already put in?
No. It really wasn't factored into the negotiations. I think it was placed there for convenience so that we could, candidly, attract potential lessees, but that actually was not, and I can certainly apologize for that, included in the negotiations for rent.
Because if I'm hearing Mr. Bell correctly,
applicants, and to make it easier for them, okay, to locate there.
All right, thank you. Those are my comments, or my questions, I guess. My comments are, you know, it's always a difficult task to look at these particular site locations for the telecommunications and so forth. I guess, you know, from my standpoint, you know, there was a couple things going through my mind as I looked at this. I definitely want this particular site to be the least amount of impact to the community at large, and that's of paramount consideration for me. Keeping this this monolithic pine, this cellular tower is smaller, and the height is as low as possible, I think is a considerable consideration. I think it'll be very important for us to have the appropriate landscape plan, not only that the city has provided thus far for the reconstruction of the tank, the water tank up there, the storage tank, but also for, as part of our agreement, to make sure that we have appropriate foliage around this particular tree into the future so that it does lessen the impacts. And I've definitely have seen these. It's you know, they, if you look at them, you can definitely point them out. So, you know, they do blend in, but they're still visual. This particular site, as it's proposed in relationship to the other sites, is definitely, from what I can see, the furthest away from any residential folks at least of the ones that were looked at. There might be some other sites that might be a little more optimal, but I guess I'm going to have to rely on the staff and the applicant to make good judgments in regards to what the research has been done thus far. So I guess with that, all the information that I've seen thus far really does point to supporting staff's proposal in the consideration for this conditional use permit. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem?
Yeah, I too. We studied when I was on the Planning Commission, we looked at the Methodist site. We did, this was what raised a lot of these questions about where you got the best coverage from, was the, at that time, that we wanted them to look at other locations. This was another location, which at that time wasn't available because the water tank was going to be rebuilt shortly. And that was the location that's shown on this map is, that it isn't the question of the height, it's the question of the window as it opens up to 101 as far as the surrounding hills go. I can support staff's recommendation here. It's always kind of a catch-22 here that you, in order to get the coverage, you've got to have the visibility, and in order to reduce the visibility, you're trying to sit down inside the trees, but you have to be above the trees. I am disappointed we don't have the landscape in place, but ultimately I do think that the landscape in this area will somewhat disguise us. I don't think we'll ever have the great situation that we have with the other reservoir where we already have existing tall trees. We have some fairly tall trees here, but nothing nearly as tall as we have up there in relation to ship to that monopine. But I can support staff's recommendation here. I do also want to point out that when you look at the picture that shows all the locations, this is actually sort of the lowest on the horizon of any of them, and independent of, you know, how tall they may individually be, if you were to look at the contour lines, it's the lowest on the horizon of them, and I think that's one of the things that we're looking for here. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. You know, I can echo, I think, what my colleagues have stated thus far. I am a little bit concerned with the observations that were made with regard to process. And it's hard to come back in after the fact and Monday morning quarterback exactly what went on. We certainly have limited or no control over negotiations that take place between a private organization and other members of the community. But we do have some control over, I think, the consistency of the statements that that are made on behalf of the city at our various commission levels. I think what would help in the future, and I understand the realities of having to travel and all of the other things, but I think what would help in the future is a better connection during the negotiation process so that perhaps the next company that we negotiate with, whoever that happens to be or whenever it happens to be, we have some, if we have different representation, there's a connection and at least some communication so that everyone is on the same sheet of music. The issue of the positioning of the cell tower reservoir, that's been quite some time ago, as I mentioned, and I can't remember who mentioned it up here, but there was quite a discussion about transplant, not losing those oak trees up there, transplanting them, monitoring them, making sure that they would survive, but also coming in with additional landscaping and screening that would soften that hillside. And as I say, that I think we were given an indication that was going to occur quite some time ago. So we need to follow up and get that moving. With that, I can support staff's recommendation tonight, and I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose a resolution of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande approving conditional use permit case number 05-013 applied for by Singular Wireless located at 300 Reservoir Road.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any discussion?
Second. I'll second it.
Did I not hear a second?
I didn't.
Not only am I missing motions, I'm missing seconds to motions. Okay, who finally did that? Okay, thanks. Now we have a second. Any discussion? Roll call, please.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Diggins.
Yes.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Yes.
Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. I know what's in. I know what's. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
We need to do the lease agreement as well. Approve the lease agreement motion.
What's the important part?
Yeah. Number.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Anybody find it first?
In the recommendation.
You could do that generically if you'd like. It's just called a land lease agreement with Singular.
Mr. Mayor, I propose that we approve the land lease agreement with Singular Wireless at 300 Reservoir Road.
So that's sufficient? Generic enough? Okay, now is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold.
Yes.
Councilmember Diggins.
Yes.
Councilmember Costello.
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie.
Yes.
And Mayor Ferrara.
Yes. I know what we need. We need a 10-minute break. Okay, the council is back in session, and we are now at 9C. Good evening, Teresa.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Tonight's proposal is an ordinance to provide some clarification of land use regulations applicable to Design Development Overlay District OMUD-2.20. And that overlay covers the land that's shown on the map on the screen in the vicinity of the Arroyo Grande Hospital. In 2004, the office professional district was changed to office mixed use, allowing more flexibility and density in the vicinity consistent with the 2001 general plan. And at that time, D.20 was placed to specify regulations for the Arroyo Grande Hospital and surrounding parcels. Staff is currently in the process of bringing forward zoning amendments concerning residential districts, and during this process it was determined that the potential for residential and office mix allowed in the overlay needed some clarification in terms of measurement and potential revision to both provide for land area for office and medical uses as well as potential for workforce housing opportunities. The current regulations for this overlay include a minimum requirement for 75% office use for the properties that are shown in this overlay. The Planning Commission reviewed the proposal on August 1st and recommended approval of an ordinance that changes this minimum requirement for land dedicated to office use to 50%. No changes are proposed for the projects in the Design Development Overlay District. This alternative allows for a case-by-case review by the City Council and still provides for this protection of area reserved for office use. Included in this alternative, and this was handed out to you just this evening, is a statement of objective to clarify the intent of the OMU D2.20 Design Development Overlay District. And it also includes some revisions in the text so that the 75% minimum requirement for office use still remains, but deviations are allowed as determined by City Council. And I'll put the changes in text on the screen now. you can see that the underlined text is what the Planning Commission reviewed. You can see the highlighted portions that we're suggesting for a modification tonight, and they're therefore leaving the 75% as it is and allowing the potential for deviation up to 25%, therefore reserving potential for a minimum of 50% of the net area for office use. And that would be as determined by the City Council if it's needed to achieve a logical and coherent site plan and also meets the objective for the district, that objective being to provide for sufficient land for the orderly development of Arroyo Grande Hospital and functionally related medical facilities. So it's an attempt to balance both of these desires for the community. Staff is recommending that the City Council introduce the ordinance tonight as revised. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Questions for Teresa? Well, I think what I would like to do is amplify on that a little bit.
This gives us the flexibility that we do need. As I stated from the very beginning, the medical needs of the community are what's our number one concern, and they change with time. We're not ready to propose something for the land behind the hospital right now, but this allows us the flexibility to plan for the future needs of the community, which has been our goal from day one.
So you're okay with the 75-25 now, which is essentially back where we were.
I'm okay with the 75-25 with the revisions that are made, giving us the flexibility to change with the project.
Okay.
Let me see if I can understand better. I think I do. Part of your concern was by making the change as proposed before we have the revision, we were making a change to all the properties, which you weren't prepared to go to a 50-50 on. You would rather have more flexibility with everything, and so this allows you to be basically flexible as you develop plans for surrounding the hospital. Is that
correct? When we talked about the 50-50 change earlier, we were talking specifically about the piece of property directly behind the hospital. As we looked, as the ordinance came today, originally, it changed the not only the lot right behind the hospital, but also the lot adjacent to the hospital. And we had previously really been assured that that wasn't going to be the case.
Okay. Any other questions for Rick while he's up here? Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions for staff? All right. This is a public hearing. We would invite members of the audience to come forward on 9C, if you so desire.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. I haven't seen the alternative until just now, so my comments, actually, they kind of apply to this as well, because that takes a little deciphering, and most of my comments tonight are going to be questions. My name is Barlow Nushi. I live at 641 Cerro Vista Circle, adjacent to one of the properties and to to the actual overlay district, which affects, if you can put the map back on, four different parcels. And I just like to clear that up. Now, let me get to this. I understand where we're at with this. I don't understand why we don't know the future needs of the hospital. I don't understand why staff can't come up with some sort of some assessment of what the future needs of the five cities and the rural areas that it provides. Why can't we use a level of service that we have now, a number of beds, number of square footage with the per capita rating, combined with an effort with the hospital? Why can't we do that and come up with our own assessment of what the hospital needs prior to making this big step? If you look up there, 25% of that site already, not counting the L-shaped space, which is already being occupied by the hospital, but 25% and the small square on the top left, 25% of the other site is already approved at this point for residential use. Now you're talking about 50% of all of that area. It's a great deal of area. And I can't understand how we've gotten to the point where we can't come up with our own assessment, why staff can't analyze the projected growth and come up with their own assessment of what they need. I am sure that the data is out there and the formulas for coming for evaluating what the level of service for a hospital should be with the projected growth. The service area for this hospital is a Five Cities area, the rural area, and future growth on the Mesa, which at this point isn't really determined. Where's the justification right now that we're going to give up a portion of the developable area for the hospital, the growth area for the hospital, without having any kind of an idea of what those needs are going to be or whether it can be there? The cultural resources we know exist on the site already. We have adjacent single-family residential all on this side, a school on the opposite corner, and single-family residential on the opposite, the two other sides of the street. If we run out of space because we've allowed residential development to use 25% more of the site, what are we going to do about parking? We're not going underground because we know we have cultural resources there, and we're going to have issues with that. It's going to be a contentious issue. Surface parking is huge for hospitals. How are we going to justify a 4, 5-story, 3-story, whatever parking structure on a site because we've given up our potential parking area for residential development earlier in the program without knowing what we are going to need? Finally, I'm a little, if you could put the language back up of the amendment, not the alternative one, I'm sorry, the one that's proposed. I beg your pardon, but I can refer to what I'm talking about there. There's no language in this amendment that describes what criteria is to be used in the amendment that tells us what we need to have in order to determine if it'll meet these needs. There's nothing in there. And in addition, there's a term that was stricken earlier up called the hospital facilities plan that was originally going to be provided by the new owners of the hospital. We determined that that timeline on that was not even, we don't even know what it'll be. But yet the hospital facilities plan, if you look in the lower paragraph, it's used down there. It says demonstration of the project compatibility with the Arroyo Grande Hospital, and or coordination with a hospital facilities plan. But yet that comment's stricken up further. So it even further adds to the confusion as to what is the criteria for future development. Let's see. Finally, I understand that we're talking tonight about a development code amendment and not a particular project. And I understand that some development codes were amended earlier this month in previous meetings. But it's a Fair Oaks mixed-use proposal, the project proposed for the larger site on this, that brought this issue to the attention of the City Council, and that's why we're here. And I have to wonder, why are we rushing into this? Why are we just going to go ahead and make this change, this amendment, when we don't really know what the future needs of the hospital are going to be, and when that particular project doesn't even have an office element? It has strictly a residential element. It doesn't even address the future needs of the hospital, and it's truly not even a mixed-use proposal at this point. But, and this is my last question, regardless of that, shouldn't we take the time to develop the needed criteria prior to considering any project for this site or the other two potential building sites? Shouldn't we develop the needed criteria to determine if those, what the needs of the hospital are going to be prior to giving away a portion of the land? This is a challenging issue because we have no way of knowing the future. But I hope we can make the effort to take a better guess at the future needs of one of our most valuable assets prior to approving this development code amendment. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else would like to come forward?
My name is David Butts. I live at 295 South Halcyon Road. If you could throw up the map again for me, just to give you an idea of where I live. It's kind of an obscure spot.
Give Mr. Butts a pointer, please.
Would you like to use the laser pointer?
Yeah, just so you know, my property... ending of quiet commercial means that it was strictly office with the anticipation, and I could be wrong on that. Somebody can correct me if they know, of quiet, That's sort of an old terminology for it. But it was for office growth for the hospital. You're starting to reintroduce in all of this a residential element in an area that people before us had the sense to say, you know, there's going to be potential growth of a Rio Grande hospital. I don't even like the idea of any residential showing up here if that's going on. And in the absence of any proposal plan or even solid research of what our needs are, to back up what Barthel said, this is a fool's errand. And so it leaves me a little irritated that we're going to this point for something that we don't have anything really clear. Anyway, so I apologize if I seem a little irritated, but you know, I'm not real happy with what's going on here. I just think there's not enough research into it. There is no guidelines set, and we're trying to do something that we're doing a rush to arms over something that doesn't need to be done at this point. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for your comments. Anyone else like to come forward? Feel free.
I'm Arlene Rowan, and I live at 226 South Alpine. And I don't understand the map. I see the streets, and I see part of it is where the hospital should be. But what sections that are not built on is this change supposed to cover? Can somebody tell me?
The red outline outlines, hold on, let me find my pointer here, outlines both the hospital parcel, which is here, a vacant parcel, and there's a project in the pipeline for this, some developed area in here, and some additional vacant area here. So it's both developed and undeveloped properties surrounding the Rio Grande Hospital and including the Rio Grande Hospital. Change.
I think what we had the last time was a project proposal that addressed this area here. Was that correct?
Yes, that's what I was talking about.
At the time?
Was a project.
Yeah.
So this is a proposal that includes all the area outlined in red, with that specifies certain land use regulations for each of these parcels. There is a project in the pipeline that has been before commissions and councils that only include this parcel right here, and that's a separate item. But it is within the overlay.
Well, as a frequent, not exactly visitor, but customer of the hospital, and I would certainly like you to reconsider making decisions of the use of the land for something other than the hospital, so that it can grow. Oh, I'm sure there's other people in the area that find it very comforting to have a hospital close by rather than dashing up to San Luis or Santa Maria for emergencies. And as medical fields progress, I would think that the area should be left open for the hospital and the medical fields to expand in this area, as opposed to housing, which can be any number of lots and areas in the Arroyo Grande that could be utilized. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else?
My name is Chet Williams. I live at 649 Services Circle.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I'm concerned about the creek in the lower. Here's your...
Certainly. By all means. Beg your pardon.
I've lived here for about Fifth Creek. We can build any place other than the creek. I live right here. Let me stop and think right here. Right there. And so it's a long ways. There's a lot of history in this area. I've been there for 27 years. And I hate to see anything built at the creek for any reason. We need to stay away from the creek. Please. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else like to come forward? Okay. Last chance.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Gary Young. My residence is 2815 Mesa Alta Lane, Arroyo Grande. I appreciate coming before you tonight. We were one of the applicants on the clarification of the zoning on this project. We do have a project, as your planning staff has mentioned, in the pipeline for the project. And I can appreciate the concerns of the residents. Back in January of this year, seems like a long time ago, we came before you with a project. We had some pretty firm direction from council. We've addressed those issues. We've addressed a multitude of issues that deal with the Arroyo Grande Creek, from the California Department of Fish and Game, the San Luis Coastal Resource Conservation District, and also salmon enhancement on the project. We've also dealt on flood control issues with those same three agencies, but we've also had some input from the city and from Wallace Engineering, who does some of those. We do support the overlay. We've worked hand-in-hand with Arroyo Grande Community Hospital, planning for the future in a fiscally responsible way. With the zoning and with the alternative that you've been given, it does give the hospital the flexibility in the future to grow, and it does allow for some residential use of the property now. So I appreciate your consideration, and we do favor staff's recommendation.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Okay, then we will. Not too late. Not too late. Come on.
I'm Bob Rowan. I live at 226 South Alpine in Arroyo Grande. And I just want to respond to the last gentleman that spoke. He's talking about pushing through a proposal based on the plans and the needs of the hospital. And I'll simply echo what the others have said in the past. There don't seem to be.
For council and Councilmember Costello, why don't you start this off?
Hey, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd like to ask staff a couple of questions before I make my comments. In terms of the changes we're talking about putting in tonight, the 75%, 25%, what specifically does that mean? If the project that we've had before us over here for residential goes in, what does that mean that the hospital will be able to build at a maximum in the future?
Tonight's proposal would mean that any parcel, any applicant for a parcel in that overlay would have to hold 75% of the net buildable area for office use, and 25% could be utilized for other allowable uses within the OMU district. It ought to, recommended alternative also provides for deviation from that 75% to allow only 50% of that net buildable area to be held or reserved for medical office uses compatible with the hospital.
Now, is that in terms of each particular parcel? So if we're talking about this parcel here, we would use either 50% of that parcel could be for non-medical use, or 25% of it could be.
Correct.
So if 50% of that was used in terms of the square footage, does that mean that in the other 50% they could put a two-story building that would then have twice the square footage that would end up with, say, 60% or 65% or even 70% of the land is, or of the development? Are we talking about just the square footage of the footprint?
We're talking about for a horizontal mixed-use project, that means you have a residential portion and an office portion. We're talking about the division of that project area, the net buildable project area. But we did have to leave some leeway in for vertically mixed projects in case there is a project that comes before you that has, for example, offices on the bottom story or two and residences on top. And we don't know what kind of what form that might take.
One of the reasons that this area has been rezoned to mixed medical use was so that we would have the opportunity at some point to include some forms of housing in there. And that was done in part of the response that was done to the demands put on the city by the state in terms of adding to our housing stock. We also have the goal of trying to maintain as much of our ag land in ag as possible, which means that we got to direct development away from agricultural areas into other areas. So it's a balancing act. We've also asked the hospital to come in and be involved in these discussions and to tell us, project us, for us, what they anticipate their needs might be in the future. What they've told us so far is that they just don't know. They haven't been able to say that they're going to need to build a new wing or not. They have told us that they want to keep in reserve a certain percentage of this property that would be developable for medical uses in the future. With that said, you know, if we're going to do the things we want to accomplish, if we're going to keep our agricultural lands agricultural, then we are going to have to develop residential properties in some other locations. The project that came before us in January, and I guess is going to be coming back before us at some point in the future, is an attempt to take a portion of this land and still leave enough land left in there for medical uses in the future. What's before us tonight is a measure that takes what was originally proposed as a 50-50 split and puts it back to a 75-25 split with the flexibility to go to an additional 25%, so bringing it back to that 50-50 split on a case-by-case basis. That's all we're looking at. We're not looking at whether or not we're going to allow housing in here at all. We've already said we're going to allow housing into this type of location. What we're doing now is just cleaning up the language to give us a little bit more flexibility in what the percentages are going to be. As such, I have no particular problems tonight with approving the language that's been put before us. People have mentioned the creek and the need to respect the creek and leave a buffer in there. And we've made it a very strong point that we have a setback in any development that's going to be anywhere near the creeks.
I think it's important, at least from my perspective, to explain what I believe is the city's role in what's going on here. I believe that Mr. Nushi and the folks that are here talking about the possibility, or first of all, talking about the fact there is no hospital facilities plan, and that is correct. And so it's kind of like shooting in the dark, and we're kind of sitting here going, well, what is going to happen into the future? And the request to maybe take it upon ourselves as a city to move forward and through studies and evaluations come up with our own future projected medical needs here for the South County. And my comment to that would be that seems extremely rational. It seems logical, and it seems like maybe that is the role of the city. And I'm going to make two comments based on that. I would have made that comment, and yet prior to the fact that I actually served on the hospital board for approximately 2 years, and by doing so, I was given a unique opportunity to try to get a better understanding of the complexities of land use, hospital expansion, and medical needs within a community. And it's more than just a geographic area, it's very complex in regards to doctors working in several hospitals. It's complex in regards to having certain specific areas of expertise in some locations and not in duplicating services, the reimbursement rates, and so forth. And I would say that on the surface, I would agree with your comments. It's logical. But in practicality, it's extremely complex. And going through several years where the hospital has gone through some transitions with ownerships, and I believe now we're in a wonderful partnership and ownership with Catholic Healthcare West, that's only happened within the last couple years. And like many organizations that are that large, it's going to take time for Catholic Healthcare West to move forward with coming up with what they're able to do as a capital improvement project over time, and also getting a good feel for how does this community hospital is looking at zoning and looking at what we perceive to be the needs of the community into the future. And when we did our general plan update, it was certainly my intention, and I believe the council's intention, to make sure that we had adequate land set aside specifically for the future expansion of the hospital. What that looks like is going to be up to those people who work in that industry and know the needs. And it could be anything from a three-story complex to a mixed-use unit that might have private doctor's offices to people living above that. I don't know what's going to be the best mix. I do know that as a board member with the hospital, I'm not a board member now, so but it's. I do know we had a difficult time recruiting new doctors into the area, and part of the recruitment problem was housing. And to be able to not only provide appropriate facilities for these new doctors to work in, but to live in, was extremely important. And it became a stumbling block to actually bring the young professionals in recruiting and actually enticing them into the area. And it's always a challenge to do that. But that's going to be very, very important for us into the future. So that's why I support the idea of mixed use. How much mixed use? I think there needs to be that flexibility, and I believe what we're trying to provide here is a statement by this design development overlay district that we're placing on this property, that one, the primary use for this property is for hospital expansion use. That's what we're trying to focus on. Do we want to allow for some mixed use, which would allow for residential? Yes. And what we've found is what's come forth is a project right now that is primarily exclusively residential, and so it's caused us some. Okay, well, what do we have left here? And we want to make sure that we're not shooting ourselves into the foot, not just 10 years out, 20 years out, but 30 years out, and making sure that we have that land availability and what that may look like. And so I guess from a standpoint of my role in trying to look into the future and having that flexibility and not being too rigid, but at the same time making a statement that we don't want this to be who own the parcels to make proposals, and as long as they work within in this overlay district, I think it's going to meet the community's needs. So it is, yes, a broad brush approach. And but I think that is what we really are looking at. We're not looking at the next couple of years. We're really looking out into the future. And we'd be remiss if we actually tried ourselves as a government agency to dictate what we believe might be the needs into the future, because it could look many, many different ways. So I guess with that, hopefully that explains at least my position in regards to supporting staff's recommendation as amended. I think it gives us the flexibility to meet the goals, both from a medical service need and also a housing need into the future. I can tell you that some of the other issues that I think did come about in the public comments, the creek issue, Mr. Williams, and I agree with you 100%. There's a lot of water that comes down there. And what I can tell you is this: is that all the plans that we've reviewed at this point are measured on a 100-year flood event, and making sure that that capacity is maintained, and making sure that there's a creek setback sufficient to deter any kind of impact on the riparian area and those types of things, erosion control. We have requested the applicant for this, and of course we're not dealing with this tonight, but the applicant for the residential subdivision next to the creek to work with all of the agencies, such as the NRCS, the RCD, and folks like that have an expertise in creekside maintenance and so forth. So that is it's a huge issue for us, or at least for me. I can speak for myself in those areas as well. Mr. Butts, and your comments about quiet commercial, I don't know what it's going to look like into the future. We changed. We actually looked at the land use. I don't believe we use that term anymore. But reality is that this is a community regional hospital, and I don't know what it's going to look like. It's been like this since I've lived here, and it shove it under the carpet and pretend it doesn't exist. When that happens, I have no idea. I think that both the community and the hospital has a lot to say about that. I think that completes my comments, Mr. Mayor. But I guess in closure, I can support staff's recommendation, and if the hospital representatives feel more comfortable with the modified version and give them that flexibility, then I think they probably have a lot more to say about this than we do, and so I could support the modified version as staff has presented. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Arnold.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Well, first off, I'm going to try to clarify something. I think there's a little confusion as to whether there's an office overlay, mixed-use overlay in this area or not. There is, and it's 7525. That exists today. What we are really talking about modifying is giving the council flexibility to potentially on a project that would go through all the processes, which we are not talking about a project tonight. We are talking about the medical mixed-use overlay, allowing a project that came forward to have up to 50% of a residential component versus what is right now restricted at 25%. Going back when I was in the Planning Commission is when this overlay initially came forward, and it was initially proposed at 50% residential, 50% commercial. And at that time, Catholic Healthcare West had just recently purchased the Royal Grande Hospital, and Mr. Castro came in and we asked him, what do you need? And he could not tell us at that time. He goes, we have just bought the hospital. We are figuring out our needs right now, and there is no way for me to tell you whether 50% is right, whether 25% is right, whether 100%. There was no ability, and it was fully understandable. And we basically decided, let's make it 75, then let's go higher based on no particular reason other than we were trying to cover the basis. And so now that he's had a chance to get into the position, he recognizes that it's a very slow process to determine what those needs are going to be. But one of the unique opportunities that if the proposed project that is working its way through the pipelines, and I don't want to get into the project because it isn't before us tonight. What we're doing tonight has nothing to do with that project. It gives us some flexibility to work with that project that they want. So really, what we are trying to do here is keep all the bases covered, give as much flexibility to the hospital as possible, and not pigeonhole. But I think there just seems to be a confusion right now that we are actually putting an overlay that right now is at 100% commercial, and it's not. We are at 75% right now. So all we're doing is giving ourselves some options. So for those reasons, I have absolutely no problem going forward with the modified alternative. I think it's a lot cleaner and easier to understand than the one that was proposed initially. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem.
I don't have a lot to add here. I do think that we're going to see these kind of issues in mixed use in general, that they're all going to be kind of one-off deals. And when we put this in place, we had 50-50 on all the rest of the mixed use throughout the community. And when this came forward, frankly, our quick fix was to go to the 75-25. And I think that when we finally are looking at projects coming forward, we realize that we need some more flexibility. We're looking at, when that project came forward, are we really talking about land square footage, or are we talking about facilities? The residential component required more square footage than an equivalent commercial project would. I think that that's what we're looking at here is, and the other point there, I think, which was already made, was that, in fact, we really saw what was really a great deal for the hospital come forward that really gave the hospital the ability to plan for their future, and yet we couldn't get there with the language that was actually in the general plan. So I think in general we're looking for the ability, and when you talk about the criteria, those are the criteria. Is it in fact going to provide for the future expansion of the hospital? In fact, this project appeared to, and certainly we haven't made a decision on it, but appeared to allow for the future expansion of the hospital. As far as the hospital facilities plan, my opinion was, yeah, this is just a real quick deal. We'll go out and do a little demographic information. We'll extrapolate that out, and we'll have a plan. But then we're told that a common hospital facilities plan is a $100,000 object. You know, maybe that's all they do for $100,000. I don't know. But we can see that that's not quite as simple a thing as that. It is a moving target. Exactly what the demands are going to be. You know, when we start talking about surgery centers, when we start talking about nursing home care, when we start talking about those kinds of things, to try to say today what's going to.
The 50-50 language in your packet and unrevised was reviewed by the Planning Commission and recommended for approval. So the revisions tonight include the potential to go to what was authorized by the Planning Commission in their recommendation with the 25% deviation.
Let me ask a question, and it's a process question. Given the language that we found on our desk or on the dais when we showed up tonight, does that language have to be reviewed by the Planning Commission?
God, I got lucky. Steve offered to answer that question.
Good.
Maybe I can begin. You can add in. Our determination. I mean, it could be sent back to the Planning Commission. We felt that since we're, for the most part, reverting back to the existing language and just adding some additional language that gives you some flexibility, it's a relatively a minor change from what's currently in the language. So we're interpreting that to allow you to move ahead this evening, but that, you know, that's a council call. Do you want to add that to
material modifications not considered by the Planning Commission would have to go back to the Planning Commission after talking with Teresa and reviewing what transpired at the Planning Commission. It was determined by staff that this would have been within the scope of those alternatives that they did consider. So we don't believe it does have to go back to the Planning Commission.
So you're relatively comfortable with it not having to go back for review. Is that what you're saying?
Right. Looking at the continuum, 75 to 50, this was certainly amongst, this is between, actually this encompasses the range that the Planning Commission considered. So I don't believe that it has to go back to the Planning Commission. That's certainly within your discretion to send it back to the Planning Commission if you feel that's appropriate.
Okay. Under the site development criteria, 2 and 3 are underlined. What's the significance of that?
That was a formatting clarification statement.
And just for clarification, when we were dealing with the, and I realize it was project specific, what we were doing was applying only in the previous exposure that we had to this this site. And when we previously reviewed the project, we were applying the 75-25 de-overlay criteria only to this piece here. Is that correct?
In your review of a project, you were looking at that land use standard
only
as applicable to that project, yes.
Okay. All right. I understand the position that my colleagues have taken. I certainly understand that it's difficult to put in planning assumptions when you don't know what those assumptions are. So from the standpoint of flexibility, I don't have an issue with what we're trying to do. But I think some of the comments that have been forthcoming by members of the audience tonight are certainly, issues that are a little bit unsettling for me. And I don't think they're at the degree or the level that would certainly interfere with what we're attempting to do tonight. But they are certainly something that would be on my mind whenever we do consider a project in this this particular area. What we're doing here is I think trying to balance density, but the unknown factor, and we're doing that on a 75-25% with flexibility, I understand, to a 50-50. That part's okay. But when we talk about horizontal density, what we're not figuring on here, and what I understand would be project specific, is intensity of use. And those big question marks loom large, not just from a residential component, but from any potential hospital expansion. And so when we consider this from an intensity of, I wanted to kind of comment on something that Councilmember Dickens said a moment ago, and it was an issue that came up when we did consider that project. And that was the fact that there would be a residential component here, but one of the criteria, not so much a criteria, but one of the considerations at the time was workforce housing and being able to provide housing stock for medical personnel. The difficulty with that notion is that what was being proposed was a housing component in this D overlay that would essentially be built and sold before any hospital expansion were to take place, therefore negating the benefit of providing housing to hospital personnel. So those kinds of issues, I guess, continue to loom large with me, and so there will be some caution that I would apply to any review of a project that comes forward. But in terms of trying to get our arms around an overlay that allows us flexibility, with the cautions in place that I've indicated tonight, I'm okay with moving forward with it. But what comes next, I think we owe it to all parties to scrutinize it very closely. I will say this to echo what some of my colleagues mentioned a moment ago, and that is that the one thing that is near and dear to all of our hearts up here, I think, certainly with all of the activity that's ongoing down in Zone 11A, and is that we are very mindful of the creek and any impacts to the creek. And I know that one of the issues that we did compel the project principals to engage in was to seek the services of a hydrologist for the Resource Conservation District who's been very close to the Zone 11A issues and has a depth of experience in development in and around a creek. And so we're very mindful of that, and we will continue to be mindful of that. We do not want to, as we have in the past, be part of the problem for the folks downstream. So just want to kind of put your mind at ease as far as that is concerned, that we will not treat that lightly, closely, at least by me, and I'm certain by my colleagues. So with that, if there is no other discussion, I'll entertain a motion.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to propose an ordinance of the City Council. Am I doing the right one? It is an ordinance, right? I'd like to propose an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande amending portions of Title 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code, Development Code Amendment 04-005A, revising land use regulations for design development overlay district OMU-D-2-2-20 within the office mixed use district using draft alternative language from Exhibit B.
Okay, we have a motion and we have a second by the Mayor Pro Tem. Discussion? Hearing none, roll call.
Councilmember Arnold?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Guthrie?
Yes.
Councilmember Dickens?
Yes.
Councilmember Costello?
Yes.
And Mayor Farrar?
Yes. Okay. All right, that takes us to item 10, which is continued business. We have none this evening. 11 is new business. We have none. Item 12, City Council member items. None as indicated. Are there any that any of you have? Council Member Costello?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to bring something up and see if we can maybe bring it back. Last weekend in the newspaper, there was an article about some properties have been cleared beyond what had been permitted by an agency, not the city. And they did reference city officials. And what I'm curious in pursuing or finding out was there something that we should have known, or perhaps were there measures that we might have been taking to help prevent the kinds of violations that occurred? So I just wonder if we might bring that back at some future point and talk about it.
That is being done in conjunction with the regulations that are being developed via the moratorium.
Thank you.
Okay, any other council member items? I do have one, and I meant to bring this up prior to the meeting, but it slipped my mind with everything else that was going on. But one thing that I would like to bring forward as a future agenda item is, and hopefully in the near future, is a perhaps a position on the Delidio Ranch project, specifically the direct and indirect impacts on the City of Arroyo Grande from a funding perspective. I'd like us to review the SLOCOG analysis and the Caltrans report in particular. And I can provide additional information on that. But there are some impacts to the city, and I think the council needs to be aware of it. So any problems bringing that back? Okay. All right, I would like to go to item 13, city manager items. Anything, Steve?
No, sir.
And 14 is council communication. Any communication, correspondence? None. Staff communications?
None, sir.
Okay. Item 16, community comments and suggestions. This is our last opportunity for members of the public to come forward and comment on items, whether they're on the agenda or not.
Colleen Martin, 855 Olive. Thank you. Thank you for taking the time to take your work seriously and for caring so much about our city that you're willing to go through piles and piles of paperwork. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Any other members of the community would like to come forward at this time? Any items, whether they're on the agenda or not? Okay, if not, we will close the community final community comments and suggestions, and I would entertain a motion to adjourn this council meeting in honor of the memory of Jackson Wood this evening.
So moved.
We have a motion and a second, and we are adjourned.